This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
It was weird. I got a frog in my throat. I've got a throg in my throat.
A throg in your throat.
A throg. I've got a throg in my throat. Just as soon as I press that button, something happens every week.
It's almost. It's almost like we've planned it all in ahead of time.
There's nothing about this show that is unplanned.
That's it. That's super slick. It's like Badil and Skinner unplanned, but it's Helm and Metcalf planned.
The rehearsal schedule for that show was really hard on them. It almost split those two boys up. It feels like it's been much longer than... my name's Nick Helm.
And my name's Nathaniel Metcalf.
And together we are the Teenage Mutants. Together we are. Not together. My name's Nick.
And my name's Nat.
And this is Fan Club.
You
listen to Nick and Nat's Fan Club. It's not our fan club.
It's not for us. It's not a fan club for us.
But it's our club that we've created because we are fans of stuff. I'm explaining the show. I've never done that.
No, we should do probably.
No!
Never explain.
Let them work it out. They're all clever people. They're not all clever people, I have to say. I posted a Instagram picture of, clearly, ironically, of Mumford.
Oh yes, I saw that.
Mumford and Sons posted on the Underground. It said coming out November 16th, and it was November 13th. And I posted a picture saying three more sleeps, and the response on Instagram was sincere.
Well, people must like them, otherwise we wouldn't be able to advertise on the Underground.
They don't seem to like them, but what they seem to think was it's much more easy to believe that I sincerely love Mumford & Sons than I was actually taking the piss. You go, I can't believe it! He's a Mumford & Sons fan! Oh, God, makes my ears bleed! Whoa! And you go, yeah, that's the joke, isn't it? You're just really re-explaining the joke to me. Whereas I was a little bit more savvy, because when I tweeted it, I just wrote, oh, the queue for the men's is taking ages. So I made a joke, you know. But people still, I mean, seem to... It's just... social media, isn't it? Punch those like buttons. If you first rule of fan club is if you've never heard of a fan club before, your friends are shit.
Yes.
And the second rule of fan club is get new friends. We're your new friends.
That's it. We are your friends.
We are your friends in a way.
Well, you're like your best friends.
But I
hope we're no one's best friends who's listening, because that would feel like. Well, I wish you well. If this is what, this is it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's all very well listening to the radio, but don't form a relationship with your radio.
No.
Don't fuck your radio.
No, thank you. Don't take it to the bath with you. Dangerous.
This has gone in such dark territory already.
I know, keep it light.
It's good. Keep it light! Here we are. I'm feeling old John Kernsey today. Keep it light!
We'll never get the Radio 2 breakfast job at this rate.
I'm just trying to think about what... it feels like this was a long week.
It feels like a long week. It seems like a long time since I've seen you.
Was it last week I saw you?
Yeah, it was here.
Part of the problems that I found about it was that I knew that you were going to go and see Suspiria this week, and I was like, I wanted to text you and just be like, but I also wanted to save it for the day.
Well, I did. I deliberately saved it for the day.
I saw your tweet. I know what you think of it. I know. I saw your opinion. You know, I've seen it. We'll talk about that in a second. It's really good. We're not like, if you've never listened to us before, we're not like lesser podcasts where they beg for
rating and reviews. Please
rate and review it, they say. You know,
please like it on things and subscribe to the...
We're not like Richard Herring's Leicester Square...
Yeah.
Podcast.
Yeah.
we're not like, that's a really good podcast.
It is very good.
We're not like that.
We're not like any of the good podcasts.
We're not like any of the good podcasts.
We're not like Adam
you.
Buxton's one or anything. We're not like that.
No, so we wouldn't lower ourselves to ask for anyone to.
We don't need things from you.
Go on your iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. We wouldn't ever lower ourselves to ask for that. One fucking cunt gave us 3 stars this week.
You're kidding me.
I'm not fucking kidding. I think they think they're being funny, but this is a message to all of the listeners. Leave the comedy to us.
Yes.
We were talking. I mean, you know, don't even consider this to be a comedy podcast. It's literally just therapy for me. I mean, I haven't even bothered putting on trousers today. I'm wearing jogging bottoms.
I didn't notice it.
I'm wearing jogging
you
bottoms.
Are as well, you
I'm
are, yeah.
wearing jogging bottoms. I just really have lost a lot of hope this week. I had a bit of a tough week, but I only live around the corner. It's only like a 5-minute walk for me. It's slightly longer for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. 45 minutes. I'm like
45 minutes. But today it's jogging bottoms day. The good thing about jogging bottoms is you just pull them on. And
go jogging.
You just get up, whack them on, and at the end of the day.
Nice. Have you ever heard Mick Jagger's song about jogging?
No.
It's appalling. Absolutely appalling. It's like one of his solo.
Was it when jogging was new?
Yeah, it was like a thing about jogging. Are we able to find that, Natalie?
Can we find?
I think it's called Jogging. And it's Mick Jagger, and I think Pete Tosh did it. It's like it's when Mick Jagger wasn't with the Rolling Stones, and so like he's trying things out, and it's like he's like someone's gone, the new thing is jogging, and he's gone, I've got it, I can write a song about jogging and catch the zeitgeist of all the guys going jogging.
But the thing about jogging is jogging never went away.
No, it didn't.
It came and it stayed.
You would think the song would be bigger, but it's not as well remembered as Sympathy for the Devil, which is weird, given that the devil has gone away.
The devil, nobody believes in the devil anymore, do they?
But I believe in jogging.
I watched Mark Gatiss's horror film documentary series that he did in 2010. Watched it on YouTube. So the quality was slightly below par because whoever had uploaded it had uploaded a low-res version, but I still enjoyed it.
It's a good series.
The writer of The Omen was saying that if he did believe in the... They said, do you believe in the devil? He goes, if I did, I wouldn't have written this. He said, well, I'm not messing with that.
So that suggests that he almost does in a funny way, because he's not like he's like... No. We'll just be... Thank you, just go. Do you believe in the devil? No.
No. Do you believe in the devil? If I did, then I wouldn't have written this.
But that would suggest that you must
that
believe
you
in
are,
it.
You do believe in the...
The idea that...
The power of Lord Satan, if that's what you call him. I don't know what his official title is.
Well, if I did call him Lord Satan, then... I wouldn't have written this.
So it's, it's a hot potato, isn't it?
I remember when I was at school, people would refer to the Omen films as they would call them. Have you seen Damien Omen? As if it was like that's his name.
Well, we used to
Damien Omen.
We used to be like George. Oh, George was on last night. George 2, George the Revenge. George 3D. Did you see George last night? Oh, George.
I love George.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, back in the day.
Have you seen George and Mildred? That's a weird sitcom.
Have you seen Jaws and Mildred? It's when Mildred marries a shark. We'd be like, and then Jaws was after him. The shark isn't called Jaws. It's funny.
There's something I really like about seeing sort of sitcoms from the 70s. And George and Mildred's got a great bit where at the opening credits, George is watching Mildred cut a string of sausages as if they're actually emasculating him. So it cuts back to him as if he's in physical pain, and he goes, "But this, none of this can happen unless Mildred is like a witch, like a Suspiria witch, and she's actually making it emasculate him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would have no effect on him. He wouldn't see it and go, 'Oh, ow.'" That really hurts.
So in the opening, what was George and Mildred? George and Mildred was a bit like Terry and June.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And what the joke is that they're married.
Yeah, but he's sort of, she's kind of, I think it's almost that he's
the
quite.
The joke is that they live in a house and they're married. This is our sitcom. It was so easy to get a sitcom made back then, wasn't it? Yeah. Fucking hell. What's your hook? Well, it's about a couple.
Man and a woman? Man and a man? Woman and a woman?
Man and a woman.
Man and a woman.
And they live in the street.
But what, are they just like friends or something?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
These two
yeah.
are married.
No way. That's great.
I love it. 8 seasons later. Whoa! We should probably add a neighbour character and spice things up a bit. That was like the way to do a sitcom, wasn't it? It's just like, a couple. And then maybe they have some kid. 2.4 children. Mm. What is that? That's like, I mean, that was like, it's a married couple in a house. And
they've got a couple of kids.
I love it. I love it. Have they got a neighbour? Yeah, oh yeah. Are you fucking kidding? Of course they've got a fucking neighbour. And then it's like, it took, you know, oh, fucking hell. A King of Queens? It's about a couple. They live in a house. Have they got a neighbour? Better than that. They've got a father-in-law that lives with them. Right, that's brilliant. I love it.
I wonder, though, if that's just something that no one pitches now. I wonder if you went into a picture meeting and went, it's a couple and they live in a house.
Yeah, but
and they're...
But that's maybe they don't pitch that anymore. But then it was just like ever decreasing circles. What's the thing there? It's just like it's about a couple. They live in a house. Have they got a neighbour? Yes. Oh, well, we've got one of them in. Yeah, but she fancies the neighbour. Oh, right. Yeah, we love it. And he's a very bitter man.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the good life is a couple. They live in a house. A man and a woman.
They're self-sufficient. So they have pigs and grow vegetables and things.
Have they got a neighbour? Yeah. Two of them. They're posh.
Posh.
And then you get it's just a tiny little change, isn't it? Tiny little change, and then you get to spaced, and it's just like you got a couple, they live in a house. Are they married? No. And you go, wow, fuck me, you've absolutely
you've redefined the genre.
It's weird that, isn't it? I don't know what to say about it. I've never thought about it. Anyway, George and Mildred. What was George and Mildred's hook?
It was that essentially that they're hook, a married couple.
Hook.
That he's almost feels like he's put upon, and that she's kind of overbearing because it's the 70s.
Does he roll his eyes a lot?
I think he rolls eyes, and she rolls eyes at him.
And does he shake his head?
He shakes his head and he gets he suffers physical pain. Yeah, he's got a
skinny
moustache.
Guy with a moustache and sort of an overbite.
He's also in Ken Russell's. What's he called? George? No, he's not called George, is he? I can't remember his real name. He's also in Ken Russell's The Devils, where he's in sort of like quite a sort of very violent, very sort of weird psychosexual movie with very religious overtones. So you go, that's weird that he's also in.
Yeah, but it was like when Eric Sykes was in The Others.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah, yeah.
I love it when you see sort of like people come along and they do a bit that's out of character. If they get away with it. Not like when Mike Myers shows up in Inglourious Basterds. Why is he doing that?
It is. I like that bit, but it really pulls you out of the film.
It's like everyone else is kind of like, yeah, they've got regular hair and makeup and they've created a character in terms of through their acting abilities. And Mike Myers is kind of like got like a wig on, a fake moustache.
But he is like in a different kind of like film.
Well, that's really weird. That is really weird. Because originally Inglourious Basterds, I mean, you were talking about it in the week, weren't you? But like your favourite Quentin Tarantino.
That's my favourite one.
I think Inglourious Basterds is my favourite one as well. I think we were talking about it last week, but I always felt like, because I was so young when I saw Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, and I got the posters and the VHSs and we all talked about them at school, and you know, you dress up in like a, you know, it was so cool, and we always had the soundtracks and you dressed up in like black suits and white shirts, and it was like, I still feel, even though they're violent and incredibly kind of like sweary and all that stuff, I still feel like they're like films of a 13-year-old boy. And I think in many ways, Quentin Tarantino is a 13-year-old boy that never really grew up. And so I think they're sort of, I like them, but I haven't rewatched them a lot. But Inglourious Basterds, I fucking
love. I love it. I've watched it tons of times.
But the production of that was, I mean, it's a shame that we never got the film that he kept going on and on about.
Wasn't it going to be a TV show at one point or something?
Well, I don't know if it's going to... I don't know about the TV show. I know that originally he was going to cast, like, it was going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone...
Oh, right, yes, yes.
Eddie Murphy, Adam Sandler. And it was going to... It had, like, this huge cast.
That's right,
like, and it was going to be, like, a Dirty Dozens kind of cast. But it was just like, oh, right. And it was like Men on a Mission, right. And he's doing his Inglourious Basterds thing. And I think that's really what he sold it as. And then when the cast got announced, and you go, wow, it's got Brad Pitt. Eli Roth.
I suppose you can actually figure out who those characters would have been. Because there is the guy who's the... I guess Arnie would have been the sort of German officer who's the kind of... what's he called? There's one of them who's sort of brought in, isn't there? Who's like, isn't he? Maybe he's Austrian. In fact, maybe he's Austrian. Who's brought into the? They rescue him from prison. Right. Who killed lots of Nazis in that he was sort of enlisted with or something.
Right.
So he probably would have been a Arnie character at one point in the.
And I think the Eli Roth character was the Adam Sandler
character.
Yeah, but then I also think that. He rewrote it and rewrote it and rewrote it. That was like announced years and years ago that he wanted to do a war film with all of that cast. And I think the cast constantly changed. And maybe those are two different
versions
of the cast. Yeah. And then, but I also think that he was going to write a Men on a Mission film, and then he realised that he actually wanted to make it a totally different film, and which is why you have a Men on a Mission film, but you don't really get that.
Yeah,
it's not that. It's kind of like that film is happening somewhere else while the film that he's made is happening. And I think, I think that initially when you're watching it, you're sort of disappointed. You're sort of mourning the film that you didn't get.
Oh, I wasn't. I was very happy.
I think initially when the film started and it dawns on you that that's not what's going to happen, it's like, for me, it was like, but whilst at the same time, by the time the film ends, you go, that film was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
The opening 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. And just like, there's that bit and the scene in the bar are the two kind of, where you just sort of, your arms folded and your legs crossed and kind of like, Oh, God. Incredibly tense.
Classic Tarantino, sort of almost on the verge of self-indulgence, where the scenes are so long, and you go, come on, mate, speed it up a bit. But but those two scenes just totally benefit from that sort of thing.
I like the bit in the start where they're talking in German, and then Christoph Waltz says,
yes.
Oh, do you mind if I speak? And it's sort of like a joke to the audience
I was going to mention that as after you'd just finished talking, and then you'd said the thing that I was going to say. It was that's my favourite bit in any of his films. And it's also one of the best jokes I've ever seen. It's one of the best cinema jokes.
Yeah.
Where you've got, one of them talking in Austrian.
Oh, the one that's French, isn't it?
One of them's French and one of them is German. And they go, well, Sin, is you're French and I'm German. Why don't we both speak English?
Yeah.
So that we can understand each other better. And it's almost like...
It's like a wink.
It's almost like a Mike Myers joke where they would turn slowly to the camera and just wink at them. But
It's that thing where it's saying something about cinema and watching a film.
Yeah.
But it's sort of making a point of going, guys... Even though this is serious, it's just a film and we're all like watching this movie.
Like The Hunt for Red October, when they're all speaking in Russian and then all of a sudden you think, I've learnt Russian. no, they're just talking in English. And it's like that. It's like he's seen The Hunt for Red October and he's gone, there must be a cinematic device that there must be like a line that you can do to explain it. Because in The Hunt for Red October, they're all speaking in Russian and then all of a sudden they just all start speaking in English. They go, right, we've done enough Russian now we're just going to sort of... There's a scene where it sort of like merges from one thing into the other and you go, right, now we're going to be speaking in English, but they're going to be speaking in Russian. So it's really clever. John McTiernan was a really great director.
He was. I think he's kind of getting his due now, isn't he? And I think people seem to be talking about more of his films
But the thing is, he didn't have a huge run of amazing films. He did He did Predator, Die Hard, Hunt for Red October, and then Last Action Hero was a bomb. Mm. And then he did like The 13th Warrior and Rollerball, and then he made some absolute fucking shit. And Die Hard with a Vengeance as well.
Did he? Wasn't he in prison in between?
He went to prison for recording phone conversations.
Did he really?
I don't really know the ins and outs of it, but yeah, he's
quite fascinating. Though I might do a Google on that later.
Let's do a Google on it. Yeah. Let's talk about it next week.
And if you want to join in, why don't you do a Google on it as well?
We should probably do the gallery.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So what we're going to do is to make the show a little bit more interactive for you guys listening at home. Is that,
it is the 1990s, so we should make it interactive.
We're going to do a section where, I don't know if it's going to be a whole section, but what we're going to do is keep sending in your fan art. Keep sending in your fan art! Yeah. And but we're also going to do a thing where we want you to send in your questions and suggestions. And what we'll do is we'll have a look at them, and then if anything sticks out, we'll watch it and talk about them. I think we should probably try and watch the same. Oh, it doesn't matter. I don't want to overthink it. Do you know what? I'm a bit low energy today because I've had a bit of a tough week. But so sorry, guys. But questions. I felt like that bit was actually me doing the show properly. And it felt really weird. It felt like
it's out of place.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. But now we're going to go over to the gallery.
Let's have a look.
So let's have a look at your fan art. By the way, we love your fan art.
Yeah, please send it in.
Neve Gurr did a cowboy thing last week.
That was great.
And the detail on the cowboy thing was really brilliant. And it's nice that, I don't know, we made this show because we're such big fans of stuff, didn't we? But we never thought for a second.
No, not at all.
That our enthusiasm would be so infectious that we would
inspire some of the great works of art in the world.
Yeah, inspire some of the great artists of our time to get in contact and draw us. So let's look at what we've been sent in this week.
That's a bit there.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's nice bits of red and blue bits. Another one there.
That's all right. So. Not a lot this week, actually, it's nice that they're
trying. Nice to have a look.
Not that they're trying, just the two. But brilliant. So keep sending in that fan art. Start sending in your questions and suggestions. Hit that like button and punch that subscribe.
We've been told that Brian Murphy, of course, played George in George and Mildred. Opposite Eutha Joyce as Mildred.
Of course, Brian Murphy. Brian Murphy.
Brian Murphy.
Brian Murphy. What have you been up to this week, Nat?
I'll tell you what I've been a fan of this week,
what?
Nick. The podcast, Fan Club. I was listening to a couple of them. I think it's very good, this. I mean, it's a really funny show, and I'd recommend it to people listening.
Yeah.
I embarrassed myself by listening to one back, which I shouldn't. Like, I shouldn't even admit that I've listened to one back. I was trying to catch up on them and get an idea of it, which is actually very helpful, I think, for the show. But I was listening back and I found myself laughing on the tube. And not only is that embarrassing, but it's doubly embarrassing because inside I went, well, that's me. I was laughing at some things that we were saying to each other. And I felt it's almost, we're through the looking glass now. It's like, this is like Inception.
Well, I've done some fan art. I listen back to it every so often to make sure that I haven't ended my career.
Yeah, said anything awful.
Because it is live.
Yes.
And you speak as live, and then it's kind of like, and so when you listen back to it, sometimes you hear something that really surprises you, and you go, oh, I can't believe I said that, or I don't know why I shared that, or whatever, but yeah, I think it's a good thing. But I also think that because you're listening to an actual live conversation, it is like you're almost listening to someone else.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I didn't remember saying any of the things. I was going, oh, this is funny.
I listen to our podcast when I'm kind of doing housework, and I listen to my albums when I fuck. And my whole attitude to it is if I wasn't 100% happy with what I was doing, you know, then I wouldn't put it out there. But basically, my music that I write is the best music that I think that I can create, and therefore it's the best music
that anyone's done ever.
Why would I listen to anyone else if I didn't have 100% complete faith in myself?
Exactly. I think Thingy does that. Andrew Lloyd Webber, I think, does that.
Yeah,
he only listens to his
absolutely
own
fucking
musicals.
Hell, driving down the freeway, listening to Cats. Fucking hell. I went to see Cats, right? Mm-hmm. Beverly Knight was in it. Beverly Knight. She was in The Bodyguard, and so The Bodyguard is a musical show, mm-hmm. right?
Based on the movie,
which I took my mum for like Mother's Day, and or maybe it was her birthday. Right, we went as a family, right? And you're about to watch The Bodyguard, and you think, "Fucking hell, I love you, Mum. This is going to be 2.5 hours that I don't get back. This is
you're taking a bullet now."
Yeah, absolutely. I like the film, but the stage show has not got Kevin Costner in it, mm-hmm. right? Or Whitney Houston.
Spoilers.
No, wrong one. Spoiler! There you go. Yeah. I never do the whole spoiler. And
don't go if you want to see Whitney Houston, the late Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner.
I don't think it's on anymore. So we went to see that, and I was just thinking, fucking hell, 2.5 hours, I'm never going to get back. Oh, God, fuck. I've got to sit through all of this. And then Beverly Knight came out and started singing, and it just was the best thing I'd ever seen. And by the end of it, we were all crying, and it was standing ovations all around. It was just one of the best things I've ever... It was simultaneously the worst and the best thing I'd ever seen, because the show was shit. You know, it's like watching children recreate their favourite movie, which is The Bodyguard, on stage, you know, and you just like, yeah. And it was kind of... But she was absolutely incredible. I fell in love with her straight away. I just thought, wow, to the point that I went to see Cats because Beverly Knight was in it.
Cats.
I went to see a friend of mine took me to the theatre, and I owed her a theatre trip, right? And she got us quite good tickets to see, well, very good tickets to see Gypsy. Right, with Imelda Staunton in it. And so as a favour in return, the night that my Live at the Apollo was on, I wanted to be out the house and busy, and I didn't want to watch it, and I didn't want to have my phone on. So I was just like, well, why don't we go and see Cats, right? Because it's got Beverly Knight in it, and, you know, I'll get some good seats. Anyway, my friend is quite unreliable. And I got they were Rosie...
C for cats.
It was Rosie, like
the Palladium. Is this as well?
At the Palladium in the stalls, right? And I get to the Palladium.
Lovely seats.
I get on the underground. Only about four stops to get to Oxford Circus. Mm-hmm. I get on the underground and get there, and I get on, and my phone goes off, and I've got a text, and it's my friend, and she's saying, I've locked myself in my house. Right? She says, I'm trying to get out of my house, but I don't know if I can. I was like, oh, right, fucking hell. Well, I've got us tickets to see Cats, right? And I was like,
She knew this, presumably, right?
And she knew we were going, and now she can't get out of her house.
How do you lock yourself in your house?
I don't know, right? But she said her housemate is going to be there soon, and she's going to let her out. I hate the musical Cats. I'm allergic to cats. In real life, the actual Cats and Starlight Express. That's the joke. But I hate the musical Cats. It's but I hadn't seen it in a long time, but I fucking hate it.
I think, right? A lot of people hate it. People don't like it.
It's right? Just awful. But Beverly Knight's going to sing Memories, right? So, you know. But I absolutely hate it. I hate the people that are in it. I hate the prancing. I hate the leotards.
You hate the concept of Cats.
I hate the concept of the musical. I hate the fact that there's no fucking storyline to it. What I didn't realise, I'll tell you the story. So so I get there and I'm just like, well, she goes, well, I might make it or I might not. And I'm just like going, okay, fucking, right. You've got like 15 minutes before the before it starts, right? So she goes, well, okay. She goes, right, but if not, I'll meet you in the interval. And I'm just like, I don't want to go in and watch this by myself. She goes, yeah, but I might be there. Like, okay, right. So then the time is clicking down, and then she goes, okay, I think, right, I've got out of my house. And it's just like, right. And
does she live within 15 minutes of the London Palladium?
But she says, I'm probably not going to get there. All right. And I was just like, okay, I don't know what to do. So what I did was I bought myself a wine. But then I also bought her a wine just in case she showed up, right?
I can see where this is going.
And so I'm double gunning.
Yeah.
Two wines on my own, going to see Cats. And I go down the central aisle to find my seats. And what I didn't know about the set of Cats is it spills over the front of the stage, which means they've taken the front two rows out.
Oh my good God.
So row C is actually the front row, right? So now I'm on my own, so just about to get into, and I see my seat and it's halfway down the aisle. There's a family that are in front that have to sort of like stand up to let me through. I've got two glasses of wine, I'm on my own, I'm sat on the front row of Cats. And as I say, excuse me, can I just get by? And they look at me and they go, oh, uncle! And then I have to sit next to this family that recognised me off telly with two glasses of wine on the front row of Cats by myself.
And is it like people on all fours? Is it like George Galloway on Celebrity Big Brother? like grown men pretend to be cats going brr at you.
Absolutely. It's Trousers Down Entertainment. God. It's absolutely.
Oh, no.
Anyway, just as the lights went down, she turned up and I was like, you fucking cunt. I was so, embarrassing. God. It was really embarrassing. But the thing about the musical Cats is that we don't normally talk about stuff that we don't like, but I mean, fucking thing about the musical Cats was just it's basically it's Cat X Factor. All the cats turn up to a talent contest.
Is it like Top Cat?
No,
it's that would be better.
But it could be called Top Cat because it's about who's the top cat is.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like the Elaine Page part, which is Beverly Knight, is basically it's a cat that nobody really rates and has forgotten and is old news and has got old, and then she's just remembering when she was the best cat, the top.
They should cast someone who's like an old star, like
that's what they do normally. It's Brian Blessed or someone.
Okay.
No, but Brian Blessed has been in it. But yeah, so she comes along and she sings these songs, and then she sings Memories because she's remembering how great she used to be, and then she dies, spoiler alert, and she flies off on a spaceship that is that is actually a bin lid. It's absolutely insane.
I'm
it's
going.
Kind of like but it's just like no, it takes 3 hours to get to the bin lid. It's 3 hours of people turning up, just sort of like having a little prance, and it's fucking crazy. Anyway, we're going to play a song for you now, and then we're going to talk about what we've what we've seen this week. I don't know what button I'm pressing. Oh, this has got one of my favourite opening lines to any song.
You look like it fit in the trunk of my car. I might let you live, I might go too far. I could wrap you up and take you home. We'd be all alone. Or should I let you be the one that got away? Knew it would happen, but I didn't know it'd be today. All the voices in my head always sing and say, the one that got away. Away, away, today. Keep it down, don't talk. Let you walk, I could feed the sink. I could grind you up and disappear. Should I let you be the one that got
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Okay, so so you saw the Suspiria remake this week?
I did.
And?
I loved it. I really loved it.
Yeah.
And to the point where there's like, almost, there's bits where you kind of almost look for fault in it as well. Like, it's like, oh, what don't I like? And there was like teeny bits that I was like, that's a bit silly. But then it's like, really is like teeny, like moments, yeah. Like seconds of it.
Because I saw your tweet and I was a little bit like, whoa. Which bits?
The bit I thought was too arch, that, and I sort of chuckled.
What do you mean by arch?
Just a bit too knowing and a bit too, there's the bit where Susie Banyan is in the office with Tilda Swinton. And this isn't a spoiler, but there's a bit where she does a dance and then they're discussing how the dance went. And Susie Banyan says, she goes, how does it feel to do the dance? And she says, it's like how I imagine being fucked feels. And she goes, by a man? And she goes, no, by an animal. And that was a bit I went, too much.
I just let all that wash over me, like animal sex in general. I didn't.
But that is like a thing where I sort of chuckled at a thing that's obviously not meant to be funny.
I didn't have a problem.
But then
I went.
But that was like, that's it, really. There's nothing. Also, like the way people had spoken about it, and that way that it is very different from the original. And yet, the first thing they said is they go, do you know what? It's nothing like Suspiria. And I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting it to be less like it than it was. I was actually a bit like, oh, it's much more like Suspiria than I thought it was going to be.
I haven't read any reviews of it. Well, what I'm doing these days is I don't watch trailers for film. I just know that I'm going to see that film. And then yes. You go, I don't need to, you know. And I'll see trailers the trailer for fucking First Man was just like, oh, what are you, snooze fest? I'm not going to go and see First Man. And then we had to go and see First Man because of this. And then it was great. Mm. And I think that, you know, First Man bombed at the cinema, didn't it?
It
did really, really badly. And it's a shame because it was a really great film. It was three quarters of a really great film.
Yeah, and I don't think it would work as well on TV either. I think it's a real cinema movie if you want to see something.
Absolutely. But I think trailers, for films that I've not heard of, they tend to put me off. And then I just want to go in and not have everything ruined and spoilt for me, and so I've been sort of like staying away from reviews, and also because of this I want to have my own opinions because of doing this show. I would rather than just regurgitating what I heard someone else say, I just sort of like want to be kind of a bit pure about it and come in and just so I've stopped watching trailers for stuff and I've stopped reading reviews. And so when I went into Suspiria, I knew that bits and pieces, I knew that the colour palette was going to be different, and I was also sort of like, not what I hate about remakes or sequels is stuff like Predator, and Predator's got so many amazing moments, and then Predator 2 even tried to do their own thing, and then when you watch Predators and they go, well, we've got to have a Gatling gun because of stay in the room, mate, and stop reading. In Predators, they got to have a Gatling gun, and someone's got to say, you're one ugly motherfucker. Yeah. And he's got to, you go, no, you don't have to do that.
One film hasn't established a trope.
No, you don't have to do that. What you do have to do is come up with your own cool bits and do them, right? And I think when they did the Thing prequel, remake thing that they did, it's just kind of like, well, they basically, what they wanted to do was remake the original film, and they've just done it again, but they've called it a prequel. And it's like, right. So, but with the Suspiria remake, what I really love about it is that they've kind of like gone, it's we've taken the basic idea, but it's not even the basic idea. It's just kind of like we've updated it. It's different. It's like we've done it, not in a different genre, but it's like, I can't remember what they did that with. They've done it with something, but it's like it's a companion piece where you can watch both of them. I mean, I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but Suspiria is one of my all-time greatest films, and I love Dario Argento. Not a giallo. It has giallo elements, but it's not a giallo. It's a supernatural thriller horror.
And but, I saw Suspiria, I reckon, in 96, and I saw it at the NFT, and I feel like it's been in my life for a lot of my life, and I've always been like, oh, it's brilliant, I love it. And so I feel like, I think there's a lot of people that feel like, again, have that thing where they almost feel an ownership over it.
Yeah,
and
sure.
You go, well, I think I like it as much as... like as much as people do like it, and I think there's room for this new one. Totally,
that
it feels like
ownership
completely,
thing is weird, yeah. Though, because I that Adam Sandler special just was mine. You know,
oh,
I
yeah,
watched
yeah.
it and it was just spoke directly to me. And then everyone is sort of recommending it, and you go, yeah, I'm really pleased for Adam Sandler that like people are sort of like looking at him, going, oh, he isn't just making shit films. You know, he has still got some talent. And I love that. And it was just like, it was a personal experience. And Chris Farley, obviously, like, I've always been a huge Chris Farley fan. And that song at the end just fucking destroys me. And then you've got people that probably haven't even heard of Chris Farley or don't even know Chris Farley that are watching this special, which is amazing because that's what Adam Sandler does. That's what all of those guys do. Whenever they do a talk show, they all talk about Chris Farley and they all tell you a Chris Farley anecdote. And in a way, he's still alive in our memories. Mm. You know, people die and people move on. And those guys, just every time they're on a talk show, talk about Chris Farley and how much they love him and how much they miss him. But that Adam Sandler special felt like it was made for me. And then when you see people tweeting about it, you're just kind of like, that's mine, that is. And it's a weird kind of like selfishness to it.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the thing is, it's not yours, is it?
It's
not really anyone's.
It's not yours. It's Adam Sandler's.
It's Adam Sandler's.
Which Netflix
to give
is
away.
Now. But with the Spirit, I saw Alice Cooper do a talk at the BFI, and he was going to, it was 8 Halloweens ago, and he was talking about the films that inspired him. And Suspiria was one of them. They showed the intro of her coming out of the
airport.
At the airport. And I was just like, what is that? I mean, I'd heard of it, but it sounded Italian, and I wasn't really in the mood to, at that point in my life, to explore Italian horror films. And then that was like my gateway into all of this other stuff that's now changed my life. And just that opening sequence is just it's almost, oh, it's just incredible where the music is so loud that,
well, it's
it overwhelms.
An incredible piece of like sound design, that opening bit as well.
One thing with the remake where you just like go, I mean the Thom Yorke music is kind of...
I didn't mind that at all.
Don't
it's
mind
not,
it.
Because, again, it's not trying to do a similar thing. It's doing
don't
something.
Mind it. I don't mind it. And it fits the film that they've made, I suppose. But also, you just think, I mean, you could easily change that soundtrack and have a different soundtrack, I think. It doesn't feel ingrained in the film.
Yes.
Whereas Claudio Simonetti's Goblin feel like they're genuinely 50% of the film. Yeah, you know, they feel like they're contributing just as much as Dario Argento in a way. But anyway, so the remake, I think Tilda Swinton in it is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I love her anyway. I think she's great.
I think she's... I don't know if it's a spoiler, so probably...
Probably too early in it to talk about.
But I would say that that when she's not being Tilda Swinton, she's almost better.
Yes.
I think it's an incredible performance. I think that's an Oscar-worthy performance. I thought amazing. And Jessica Harper.
Yes.
Being in it. I was so absolute. What an absolutely pitch-perfect... I guess it's a cameo, but she's turned up at all the red carpet events. It's a pitch-perfect cameo where you just don't go... I think it's a genuine part of the film. I just think you just go, you've absolutely nailed that. I love her so much. She made like a whole bunch of films in the 70s and early 80s, and I just love her. And it was so good seeing her in a film that I think will be a hit.
I hope so.
But it was. But when that first sequence, which they put online, so I'm really glad that I didn't see that first dance sequence.
You know? Right. Okay. Yeah.
And they put it online to like bait people to come in and see the.
Oh really? What bit did they put online? The dance.
And And people were like fainting. They showed that as a clip at a festival, or maybe they showed the whole film at Cannes, and people were fainting and walking out. That scene is horrific.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's, but it's like.
But it's also this thing that people, criticism of it seems to be that it's not really a horror film. And you go, that's horror. I mean,
that is a horror film.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Absolutely. I think that the original is kind of like a horrific. Fairy tale.
Yeah.
And this is sort of, it's not necessarily a fairy tale because it's kind of more centered around reality. But when it's horrific, it's absolutely horrific. And I also think that the way they've done it, I don't know how they did it, but it would have been like I would imagine it's a really good blend between practical makeup effects,
yes,
and CGI, where you go, yeah, I can sort of sense the CGI in it. And then towards the end, it becomes a bit of a CGI fest. But I can sort of sense the CGI in that sequence. But also, I think that it's quite restrained and it's really well done. Mm. And there is still practical stuff in there. And then maybe for the last half hour, I honestly couldn't follow it. And I think, but in a way that made me think, you kind of like just letting the whole experience wash over you. It's like this. It became less horrific towards the end. It became more kind of like ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I just think that the original, I think, is, and by Dario Argento's own admission, he's a visual guy. You know, he does stuff visually that doesn't necessarily make sense, and it creates a dreamlike
a
state.
A mood.
And it's a dreamlike state. And that's, I think, what I loved about the original. And this has got a better plot.
Well, it brings in lots of stuff from the time. So it's saying, like that, it's set in Germany in the same year. But in Germany at the time, it's 30 years after the end of the war. And they've got the Baader-Meinhof hostage situation. You've got all that kind of stuff going on in the background of this real world things. It's like, well, this is what was happening at the time that film is set, in the place it was set.
But also the fact that they're all preparing to do a dance.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
You go, yeah, of course. I mean, that is such an obvious addition to it, where, like, in the original, they're just dancers hanging out at a dance school run by a coven of witches. And in this one, they deal with the fact that
they're preparing to put a show on.
Also, I remember describing, I said, you've got to watch Suspiria. It's like Harry Potter, only with witches, right? And then I watched it again, and it's like, they don't mention the witches till right near the end, and it's almost like the twist is that it's the witches.
Yeah.
But with the remake, they deal with that straight away. They talk about witchcraft all the way through it, and you go, right, okay. I just think that the ending is different from the original, and it's a really welcome, unexpected kind of like, oh, God, you did that. And I just really... But the fact that it's just... The original is just a bunch of ballerinas practicing ballet, and this is like, no, they've got an end of year
show to put on,
and that's what they're practicing for the whole way through. I just think it gave it so much more focus. I loved it. Anyway, we are on line one now. So it's this one, right? So on line one now, we are joined by Alex Green, who is the Klingon ambassador to Wales and completely fluent in Klingon. Hello, Alex. Are you there?
Hello, Alex.
I'm there.
Hi. How are
you? Hello.
Okay, so far. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Where are you calling us from? Are you calling us from Wales?
Yes, I am actually calling from Wales.
Whereabouts?
I'm a bit down to earth today.
Whereabouts in Wales are you?
It's actually North Wales.
North Wales, and you speak fluent Klingon?
Yes, I have done for over 30 years now.
Oh, wow.
The publishers of all the Star Trek fiction and novelizations, Simon and Schuster, they released a book called The Klingon Dictionary, which came out as sort of a merchandise thing for Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
That's the one when Leonard Nimoy made his famous comeback as Spock after having been killed off in the previous film. So the book caught on, and maybe a couple of hundred people bought it. But the next thing you know was that the Americans came forth with the Klingon Language Institute and began promoting it. And that caught on. Suddenly there's thousands of people who speak it, and of course there's a fair chunk of the human population that know at least one Klingon word. That word is Khatla, which you might have heard once in a while.
I think I have heard it, and is that a swear word?
No, it just means success. It's basically
success,
the Klingon equivalent of break a leg.
And in the Klingon dictionary, like in the way that a child might look up swear words, does it have rude Klingon words?
It does have one or two, but they're not translated in the book. There's some unusual words, and they're used in what's called mukarvesh, which is curse warfare. A good example of a sort of curse warfare would be to be able to tell somebody, for example, your mother has a smooth forehead, for example. That sort of thing. I mean, when you consider they've all got these brow ridges on their forehead.
Including
Laurel, who's the character in Star Trek Discovery, which, by the way, the DVDs for Season 1 is coming out on Monday, so I'm looking forward to that. But Laurel, who's played by an actress called Mary Chifo, she had a load of Klingon lines to be able to translate to actually speak as though she was a fluent native of Kortnosh, which is the Klingon homeworld. She did an amazing job. They've all done, actually, in the new series. She'd understand all about insulting someone by claiming that they had a smooth forehead, as it were, because that's one of the grievous insults for Klingons, actually.
Have they added to the dictionary over the years? Because I imagine by the time Star Trek 3 came out, the actual amount of Klingon that had been spoken on the TV series and in the films was quite limited. So the dictionary would have added to it. But then over the years, how many Star Trek TV series have there been? Different series?
Well, the different movies which featured Klingons, they've all added to the canon. And unfortunately, shall we say that they used a rather exotic dialects of Klingon in Star Trek Enterprise and Star Trek Voyager.
Why would you say exotic?
They don't actually have many translations in real Klingon. To the untrained ear, it all sounds as if the person's just sort of making up sounds as they go along, so it all sounds cha-ha-di-bah, or something like that. But for example, there have been new terms that have actually cropped up, especially during Star Trek Discovery, where they actually made a whole brand new bunch of terms, for example, such as, there was one word here which was for a complete transformation, which would be re. So, for example, that was used for the word terraforming. Although that was not used in dialogue, it was actually translated for Klingon subtitles.
Do you ever watch an actor speak Klingon on the series? And when you hear them, you go, "That's rubbish, mate. You've not learned that at all."
I've seen a few of them, and I've turned around and I thought they didn't have a voice coach, for example. But the ones in Star Trek Discovery, they've got a really good voice coach.
And Star Trek
Discovery, Ian Nolan's done a remarkable job, as has Robin Stewart in actually translating the lines. And I would just mention the fact that the one thing, if you want to learn proper Klingon as it is spoken, you can get the series that is coming out in DVD or whatever, because the Netflix version that came out earlier on this year, they actually had a special facility where you could select the language of the subtitles.
And was one of them Klingon?
Yes, exactly. If you came here and you were a Dutch speaker and you saw the Netflixing and you wanted to catch up with the Dutch, that's fair enough. Dutch, German, Japanese, whatever.
Yeah.
And then one option says Klingon. And the even if they were speaking in English, they had the German Klingon teacher, as he calls himself, Leven Litter of the Klingon Language Institute, he translated every single spoken word in Star Trek Discovery into the subtitles in Klingon. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that those lines in those subtitles will appear on the DVDs coming out on Monday.
So you're actually here, you're on this promoting that DVD and Blu-ray release of Star Trek Discovery. I haven't seen Star Trek Discovery. Where does it fit in to the general Star Trek world. Where is it set? When is it set?
Mm-hmm. It's set 10 years before the time of Kirk and Spock.
Okay.
So it starts, it is a decade before the episode called The Man Trap, which was the first ever aired episode of Star Trek. That's the one that featured the M113 salt vampire, in case anyone wonders.
Is that the one where it's Captain Pike? Is it that one?
No, that was the pilot.
The episode featuring Captain Pike was called The Cage.
Oh, right. Is that not the first one?
That wasn't the first one. It wasn't the first one aired.
Oh, okay.
The old Star Trek mythology, and we're talking here about the mythology of the show rather than the setting, is that the first episode was rejected by Paramount.
That's The Cage.
The Cage. Yeah, that's it. That's the one when Captain Pike got imprisoned by an alien race called the Talosians that could cast illusions. He wakes up and he's an experimental lab rat, and hopefully the Talosians want him to be the Adam of a new human species on the surface to basically repopulate their depleted world, that sort of thing. So that's the story. That was the very first story. It was rejected as being too cerebral. And then they released the second pilot, which basically became Where No Man Has Gone Before. And then that gave birth to the whole series. And
when did Kirk get introduced?
That would have been in the second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Oh, so the one with, yeah, the one, the cage, is then they put it in later, don't they? It's a flashback or something.
That's it. It was the only two-part episode of the original series.
I knew I'd seen it.
The Menagerie.
I knew I'd seen it.
Yeah, that was it, basically.
And so how did they introduce Kirk? Was it a changeover? Did Pike hand over to Kirk or what?
No. Unlike the handover which took place at the end of the 2009 Star Trek, when Kirk was actually given command of the Enterprise from Captain Pike, and Pike was in the wheelchair at that time. Unlike that, which takes place in the Kelvin universe, the series just began with Kirk and Spock. And in fact, the episode that The Man Trap is started with Kirk and Spock, with McCoy beaming down to the surface of M113. There was no talk about any change of leadership because this was the first ever program to be aired. So basically they assumed that Kirk had already had command of the ship for some time, and this was just part of his normal duties, as it were. And then it began the five-year mission from that point.
And so you are actually, because you're promoting the new Star Trek Discovery, that's coming out on Monday on Blu-ray and DVD. Mm-hmm. How does it feel for you, as someone who's been a fan of Star Trek, to actually, I guess you're now employed, or you're being used by the Star Trek people to promote their stuff? How does that feel for you?
Well, the strange thing is, I like Star Trek, and I'm not doing this in any sort of official capacity.
Oh, really?
Like that. I like Star Trek Discovery an awful lot. It has a vibrancy to it that I've not experienced since. Well, there were certain episodes of Deep Space Nine which really sort of gave the feeling that they were operating in a diverse and forward-looking universe where the infinite diversity and infinite combinations really was a thing that was, you know, that people were believing in. You could say that Star Trek Enterprise, which was the predecessor series for about 10 years,
with Scott Bakula,
That was a bit too human-centric, strangely enough. It felt more human-centric than the original series did.
Right.
But with Discovery, for example, even though the protagonists are, in fact, humans, they're vastly more diverse. And I think it's that diversity that I'm the biggest fan of and that I'm seeking to promote. That, and being a little bit selfish, the heavy promotion of the Klingon language, which is all the way through the first series.
Lovely stuff.
It's an amazing thing to see this flood of new Klingon dialogue, and I'm thinking, I'm writing it down here. This is better than Shakespeare. No, not quite, but this is as good as Shakespeare. Well, close enough.
Thank you very much for joining us, Alex. That's been terrific. What an insight. And thank you. And so Star Trek Discovery is out on Monday.
And
can you get us to say what's tell your friends in Klingon?
That would be, excuse me for a second. That would be Jupolich Yicha.
Oh.
Jupolich Yicha.
Jupolich Yicha?
Which would be tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Jupolich Yicha.
Wow.
Yeah, I did it. Great.
Fluent. Absolutely fluent.
Thank you for talking to us, Alex.
Thank you very much. And Star Trek Discovery is out on Blu-ray and DVD on Monday.
Have a lovely day. Thank you. Have a good day.
Right.
People are fans of stuff. It's like Klingon. But, okay.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
I was meant to play a song.
Oh, right, okay.
I pressed the wrong button. What song am I playing? Am I playing your song?
We could do. Should we do one of theirs so we can have both of their songs?
Well, what's them? Oh, right, yeah. Okay. This is the most casual day I think we've ever had. We've left the doors open. I keep walking in and out. It's fine. Hello. Who am I saying hello to? I'm saying hello to the listeners.
The listeners.
We're joined in the studio now by Hannah George and Taylor Glenn, who are responsible for the Drunk Women Solving Crime podcast, which is a huge hit. Is that what it's called?
That's, that is what it's called. Okay, yeah.
Which is a big hit. It's part of the title.
So, yeah. Which is a big hit. It's been a big hit, hasn't it? It's been a really big hit. I mean, you started in September, and you're number 5 on the iTunes chart, and you've really only done kind of like almost a handful of them, whereas me and Nat have done
we've done 30
of these. We've got like 7 listeners now.
So how do we get listeners?
So how do we get listeners? How do we get listeners?
We are as surprised as anyone, to be honest. Have you tried adding more alcohol, though? Because I feel like that is...
Maybe that's it. That's probably the answer. Or it's perhaps not a good idea.
I think because of the time that we record ours, the alcohol content is actually at the tail end of the journey.
Yes.
So it's often... I mean, you're really there using the alcohol to launch yourselves into a bit... And I'm kind of like... It's the repercussions the next day. Hungover.
Yes, that's where we are today. A little bit. We recorded last night.
So how drunk? So basically, talk us through what the podcast is. How did you come up with the podcast? No, hang on. What's the best way of doing this? What is the podcast?
It's a true crime comedy podcast. And we actually started with the title, which Katie, who couldn't be here today.
That's a shame.
Why? It just sounds funny. Katie couldn't be here today.
Is it another crime?
She has childcare issues. Okay.
Oh. She's not hungover.
She's probably hungover and has childcare issues, which is the worst combination I can vouch.
Being hungover
for that.
And childcare is a childcare issue in itself, I'd imagine. It's not.
It really is.
It's probably difficult. Doesn't make it easy.
It's true. But yeah, it's a 3-part format, so we always ask our guests. We have different female guests, not just comedians. We've had musicians like Louise Wenner, who you just heard, has been one of our guests. And we always ask them, have they been the victim of a crime? And they share a crime story. And then we deconstruct a true crime story in sort of a quiz format. And then we end by solving, I use that in a very loose sense, a listener crime.
I like that you sort of each get a chance to host it, don't you? So you sort of take turns in being the sort of main, I guess, you bring the crime to the... You're sort of the police... detectives.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. You get to be the chief superintendent.
I was imagining it like
Jane Tennyson.
Jessica Fletcher getting fucked off her face. And
is she still alive?
Jessica Fletcher.
Oh, maybe
Angela Lansbury was on the fucking... Get Angela Lansbury.
Let's get Angela Lansbury.
Oh, my God. I have goosebumps.
She was in the West End. She was in a play.
Shit. That's right.
She was a couple of years ago. I saw
Angela,
it.
Angela, listening...
Oh, was it?
Was it this year or last year? If Angela Lansbury is listening...
She's a big fan,
isn't she? I would fucking doubt it.
But I do like... I mean, I hope she's not... I didn't know if she was dead or not.
If you've made it this far, Angela, you've gone through...
If one of your friends is Angela Lansbury, and you haven't told her to listen, then that's on you. You've got to tell, get her on, get her to listen.
Yeah, if anyone out there knows her, we'd really like her on the show.
Oh my God. I mean, hang on, guys. If anybody out there knows Angela Lansbury, we'd like her on fucking fan club first, all right?
Absolutely not, Angela. Come for us, please.
Yeah.
I mean, she would be able to solve the crime immediately as well, though, wouldn't she?
She'd
ruin the format because she'd get on and go, it's this, isn't it? The answer
I just couldn't cope. She would be such an amazing guest. She'd I can't. Incredible. I would be silent. I'd just be drunk and silent.
So you have a wish
but
list.
But shouldn't you just go through all of the women that have been crime solvers, you know? Caroline Quentin from Jonathan
Creek. Yeah, literally today, like, being here has made me think about having actual kind of, like, TV detectives on. Like, we've got, like, one lady that I know is a crime writer, and she used to be a policewoman, so she's coming on. So we've got some people that are, like, actual police people, but I'd literally never even thought of the idea of getting...
Well, sometimes a man's input is useful.
I think that's why we've been so successful.
I think that's why.
Can't
I think
we
you're
all
right.
Just learn to get along.
We're still getting used to everyone saying yes to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're writers. Yeah. We never hear yes. Angela Lansbury, we're on it.
Why not? Why not Angela Lansbury?
And the bigger it gets, it seems the easier it is to get people to agree to come on. So
yes. So thanks for coming in.
Yeah, your guests are pretty pathetic.
No, not at all. But we're a podcast. Yeah. And we've got a podcast coming in.
Yeah, we only booked you because we wanted Katie Wilkins to come in. And now
we knew that. Well, we knew that.
Well, me, Hannah, and Katie go way back to
11 years, maybe. I think
was it 2008 we did Comedy O'Clock?
Yeah, I think
2007 we did Comedy O'Clock.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. Was it 2008 we did Comedy O'Clock?
Yeah.
What time is it?
It's Comedy
O'Clock, motherfuckers! And we're on at like, what time are we on? 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
1 o'clock in the afternoon.
1 o'clock in the afternoon. And when we're at the Free Fringe, what's the name?
Espionage.
Middle
yeah.
floor of Espionage.
Prepped a room.
And when it rained, we fucking packed it out, didn't we? And so you, Katie, and Richard Bond were already doing a show together.
Yeah.
And then you needed a compare.
Yes, we
and
did.
You asked me to compare, and I compared.
Yeah.
And we compared in Winchester, and that's when we all got to know each other.
Oh, yeah.
And then we went up to Edinburgh, and I was up there first, wasn't I? And I was like a bit nervous because I didn't know you very well.
Yeah.
I knew Katie a bit, and I was a bit nervous because you asked me to pick up the flyers, didn't you?
Oh, I told you, Taylor.
I was waiting for this story.
Is this a crime? Is this a crime that we don't know about yet?
At least one person in the room will think it is. And right. I have seen the evidence of this crime.
A hate crime, if anything.
So I had to go. I was the first person in Edinburgh and I had to pick up 5,000 flyers. Was it 5,000 or 10,000 flyers?
I mean, let's say 15. It was a lot.
15,000 flyers. I had to pick up 15,000 flyers that they'd done for Comedy O'Clock. And it was a very well-designed flyer. It had all of us on there, didn't it? And, yeah. And it was done like a comic book where at the end, at the bottom, it had a little caption and it had like a thing about us. It's meant to have our reviews, wasn't
yeah.
it? And I think you had a rather good review in there.
Yeah,
didn't you?
I think very funny or
and
something.
And Katie had a good review mm-hmm. in there. And I think even Richard had a good review in yeah. there. But my review in there, it simply said, tit. It said, Nick Helm, tit. On 15,000 flyers, and I picked them up, and I was absolutely gutted.
You were, I mean, you didn't find it funny, did you?
Well, not that I didn't find it funny. I genuinely thought that you'd asked me to be involved in this thing, and you hated me. And I was so, I had these 15,000 flyers, and I was, my heart broke. And I was like, oh, I thought I was part of a gang. They just thought it was. And then you were like, oh no, we've sent the wrong one off to get printed 15,000 times. On the back, it had a quote from the Queen saying, I laughed till I shat.
Well, in my defence, and like, it broke my heart as well how much I could tell that. You know, when you can tell in someone's eyes and you're like, fuck, I think we fucked up here.
We got over it.
But we did, because look at us now.
Yeah.
You know?
10 years later, I can still talk to you about it.
And I did say to Taylor, like, he's going to bring this up 100%. But, like, what happened was, in our defence, is we were making the flyer and we've been making it for a while and there was a deadline. And we're like, Nick, you have to give us a quote that you want on the poster. And then you'd never apply to our emails.
Do you know why, though?
So
it's because that year was the year that I wrote I Think You Stink and I did a double act, Helm and Taylor, and I did yours and I did a solo thing. So, sorry I missed your deadline.
It's not the printer's deadline.
Oh, you guys, this is like offender rehabilitation programs where the victim comes in.
Exactly. We're like the moderators.
I don't think, maybe this is what you should do on your podcast. You should have someone confronting one of you about something you've done to them. Which is kind of what we're doing.
We've never run out of people to come on.
I couldn't have missed the deadline, Hannah. Right, because there's no way you'd have sent that to the printers.
No, because
what you actually did was you sent an old draft to the printers.
We did, because we put tit in there because you didn't reply to our
as a placeholder.
As a placeholder, sure.
Yeah,
and we didn't.
It was in capitalized Comic Sans, just to paint the picture fully.
Yeah, if you still got a copy of the flyers.
I have. I've actually got a picture of it because I sent it to Taylor the other time. Yeah.
You probably still got about 11,000, didn't you? Imagine that. So what happened to my flyers, I get them and then, oh, thank you very much.
The flyering really didn't have any impact on how many people came to see the show. It was all about whether it was raining
or not. Yeah, exactly. But, Nick, we never thought you were a tit. We sent it to Richard. Richard sent the wrong one. We didn't even make that final thing. So
yeah, the final one said cunt. So, sure. But, yeah, so we've known each other for a very long time.
And
Katie.
Are we?
You and Katie, but we only met this year, didn't we?
That's right.
Not that this whole thing is about who I've met and when.
Well, I'm finding I was kind of a ghost on the comedy circuit. Like, even if people have met me, they're like, yeah, I have no idea who you are. I'm like, yeah, that feels about right.
Well, it's funny because we must all have been doing it at the same time.
Yeah.
I think I always thought of you as being much more successful than I was there.
Oh, thanks for that. I thought of myself that way too.
A different plane.
Didn't help the reality, but...
Well, it's good, but at least in your head you can be, well, I'm doing all right. Whereas I think I was like, well, this is going appallingly for 10 years. So I've got that. So in some ways, it's a nicer plane to be on.
Well, I felt like the Hasselhoff a little bit because I did lots of gigs in Eastern Europe and I would like sign autographs there because they thought we were well-known comics and I would apologize. I'm like, this really means nothing. And they're like, no, please.
You felt like David Hasselhoff or the Hoff?
Are they different men?
No, but you don't say the Hasselhoff.
Did I say the Hasselhoff?
Yeah,
said, oh, that's so embarrassing. No, I've really turned into my mother.
Sorry.
You know that, the Hasselhoff. I was on Pinterest yesterday. And
but you've lived in the country for 13 years?
Yeah, 14 actually,
14.
As of last month. Yeah. Yeah, so can't you tell by my accent?
I know,
it's totally gone.
You're like the Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, it was you that said, I laugh so much I shat, I believe, that they used in the back of the flyer.
I said that just this morning.
I really love your podcast, and I was listening to it, and as soon as it finishes, you want to listen to another episode, which is what I found. And I don't really listen to podcasts, so I really had to go out of my way to
thank you very much.
Obviously, I listen to our podcast, and I listen to...
To the live show as it goes out.
That one episode of Brett Goldstein's podcast that I was on.
That you were on.
I listened to that and I listened to yours as well.
Oh.
No, I didn't listen to Nat's.
I mean, don't. It was.
It wasn't.
No,
the
it
best.
Was brilliant.
It
I really liked
best.
It. No, I loved it.
So well done. It's really great that you've come up with the format.
You did a cool thing that when your podcast launched, you did it like a Netflix thing. So you had three immediately.
Yeah.
That was a clever thing. And it also told the audience, of course, that you've got the. They knew the format that you're going to have a changing host every week.
Yes,
very
yeah,
clever.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, what's good about that is that kind of by launching three at the same time, it kind of got us when we went in at like number four on the charts because we had three. So
I
people
see. So it was a cheat. It was a cheat. That's how you did it.
Kind of was.
So it's three at once.
I think I literally Googled like how to launch a podcast.
Oh, really?
Genuinely, and I found like a 10-point list, and we followed a few of them. I feel like we've been very lucky in a lot of ways.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
We were lucky to get, you know, because Catherine Ryan did our first episode and that was just a fluke that she was available on the first slot we did. So we're like, okay, let's do this then. We know what we're doing.
Yeah,
but you do
it's
know.
Really fun.
And you're sponsored by drinks companies.
Yeah, well, they send us lots of free booze, which is amazing. Like, we have had
yeah,
no lack
I was
of
listening.
Booze.
I was just thought that's absolutely fucking outrageous. Why can't we can't even get Arrow Films to send us a fucking DVD that we can talk about. Fucking not even a Blu-ray, a DVD, and Arrow Films. We took fucking.
We've got our first advert as well. It's a film that we're doing, so, like in the next one. Yeah.
Advert that's a film.
Yeah, so we're doing like an advert for a film. So they sent us like a screener. So
of what?
To get big money for that.
Well, some money.
You know, we're not at liberty to discuss our
no, hang on.
Hang
this
on.
Is a
film deal.
No, because this is a podcast, but it's under the guise of a radio show.
It's a radio show,
but they get a lot of mileage out of it of it being a podcast.
We say a lot of mileage. We've had a download. Don't worry about that.
We got a 3-star review this week.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
They were being funny, but
oh yeah, I read that.
Still effects are
yeah.
overall.
They were obviously making
mood.
A joke, and then you're like, well, that actually does affect your
does
star
affect.
Rating.
Does
what
the
a
star
great
rating.
Joke.
And how I feel for the rest of the week. Unfortunately.
Are you worried that the success of the podcast will lead to you being referred to as a collective that's just the drunk women, which doesn't seem like a great thing? The shortening of it suggests that you are drunk all of the time.
Yeah, well, that's how we get introduced. We did our first live show, and we hadn't talked about it. So when she said, "Welcome the drunk women," I was like, "Oh,
that's
who we are." It was always leading to this.
Where do you do the live stuff?
At the Pleasance.
Oh yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
Oh,
and right downstairs.
Oh right, okay, yeah. Because Natalie and Hannah were talking about how they went to see you.
Oh okay,
and,
yes.
And I thought, that's nice. Oh, Hannah didn't go, sorry. Natalie was talking about how she went to see you, and I thought, oh, that's great. They get out, but they literally went next door. yeah, sure. Okay.
Well, that was good. We've got another one coming up, haven't we, on the 6th of December?
That's cool.
Yes.
And our tickets on sale now?
They are on sale.
They are. 2/3 sold out, so yeah. get your tickets quick.
Well, this should give it a bit more of a nudge. That's good.
Yes, please.
But I don't think this has affected anyone in a positive way, this show.
Our one.
Other than it gets us out of the house.
Well, if people like...
Just round the corner for me. It's slightly longer, slightly further away from that.
Yeah.
It's going to get us Jessica Fletcher, I'm sure of it.
If you get Angela Lansbury and we don't, that'd be...
I'll start calling her actual name as well.
Yeah, Jessica Fletcher.
Jess, what's up?
So when you do the podcast, not the live podcast, what time of day do you record it?
5 and 7.
Yeah, that's generally the thing. When we did it in the summer, we started it. We used to do it at 7 and 9, and then we realised that we were just missing all our trains because we were just drinking afterwards, and we ended up having to like spend a lot of money on Ubers. So now we start earlier.
Yeah,
and you can be in bed by 11. Yeah.
Nice. But you're just by 11, you're in an appalling state. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. We record 2 in one like session,
so you're slightly drunker for the later one.
Yeah. I mean, quite a lot drunker sometimes.
Yeah.
We sort of invite people who listen to guess which the second recordings are. Drunker women solving crime. I made bad choices last night. I'm just like, listen to my voice. I have like hangover voice.
It's quite nice, actually.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
What were you drinking last night? What was your tip?
Well, we have this Balkan Beer 52 sent us this Balkan range of beers. We can't pronounce any of them,
they're
but
sure.
They're 6%. Like 6.5%.
They must love that as sponsors.
And then we opened Prosecco, and
because it was Faye Carruthers, who was another guest, it was her birthday last night, so we have Prosecco as well.
So on behalf of her birthday, I had 2 bottles of Prosecco to myself, which is just how I like to celebrate.
Was it your birthday?
No, it was our guest's birthday. Faye Carruthers, who's a sports presenter and voiceover artist.
I imagine if she's doing any voiceovers today as well, that's ruined.
Exactly. So,
I'm sorry. I'm having a really bad day.
Are you?
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's fine.
You know, I was a psychotherapist.
And
right?
I don't want to talk to a psychotherapist. No, not on the radio.
I think we should do it. A drunk psychotherapist and
a hungover psychotherapist.
What so would make your day better? Let's make your day better.
I don't think that it will work.
I just keep going
on those Alan Partridge moments where you sort of like zone out and picture your life.
Are you dancing in front of
I'm someone? Dancing in front of Tony Hayes with traffic cones coming out of my top.
Right.
Sorry, that's a bit. Sorry. Let's onwards and upwards. Keep it light. Oh God.
So the guests on your next live podcast, Susie Ruffle and London News. That's I listened to the London News one. That was a very good one, wasn't it?
Thank you.
Very good one. I mean, I feel like that's almost damn you faint praise to say that a guest. That is a good one, wasn't it, when you had a good guest?
No, but it's true. What's amazing is
we've gotten lots of feedback about that one.
Everyone brings, like, every single episode feels a bit different because they've just got a different...
Because they bring a different personality to it.
Well, absolutely. In London, what I liked about London is...
Also, a different... People's personalities change, don't they, when they get drunk?
They do a bit, yes.
you almost see someone devolve into a monster, especially if you're drinking gin.
Yeah. We've had a couple of people get pretty drunk, but we do edit a little bit around what we say or what.
Have you ever
say.
Had a friend on who, whilst drinking, you were like, "They are appalling drunks," and I had no idea.
No,
I think we're all right.
But we the second recording, which we haven't released yet, of our live show is Olivia Lee, and she was proper smashed. So that is going to be a good one.
Have you ever had anyone request, like, please don't put that out? Has that ever happened yet?
No, do you know when it has yet. To? No. If anything, people are like, please keep it in, I don't care. And then we're like, oh, yeah, but you might get arrested or something.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah. It's plausible that could happen in the future, though, right? That someone just begs you, like, oh, God, please don't put that out.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But the thing is, you know, we're not out to sort of like, you know, make anybody look stupid. It's kind of the drunk thing is, you know, we get sort of various levels of drunk depending on sort of like how we're feeling that day. And it's not a kind of thing. It's not like with drunk history, the whole idea is that people say completely fucking ridiculous shit. But with this, it's more that it kind of just takes the edge off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not that we want to be like, although the first episode that we did after we sort of drank quite a lot afterwards, and I remember going home and being sick in the toilet for the fifth time that night, and Toby, my boyfriend, just standing in the bathroom doorway, and he just looked at me and just went, "This is your job now." Oh God!
Yeah, it is. It could be quite dangerous. It could be like a slippery slope for all of you.
On drunk history, you have a medic on standby who takes a breathalyzer to make sure that you don't go over a certain.
Is that so you don't go over? I thought it was to make sure you were...
I don't think it's that you don't go over a certain limit. I can't remember why I was hammered. but I can't remember what the purpose... It's just to make sure that you don't... In terms of insurance, the TV company are just basically covering their asses to make sure that...
Oh, wow, yeah.
But
yeah,
you
that
have
makes
to
sense.
Every like, half hour or so, they take your...
Yeah.
And then also you record it three times. So you record it... The first time you record it, you're relatively sober.
Oh, okay.
And then the second time you record it, you're a bit more drunk. And then the third time, you're just paralytic. And then they splice it all together. And so, because they want you to basically be able to tell the Battle of 1066.
Is that the one you did?
Yeah. It's not always 1066.
Yeah, that'd be such a boring...
It was Cronenberg 1666 when you did it.
That arrow.
Brilliant, yes. And yes. But by the time you do the third one, you're literally just making shit up, and then they just do a combination of three. But that's a bit you doing your double records, isn't it? So by the first one is kind of like you're getting into it. And
yes.
What was the unicorn gin like? What makes that so special?
Well, it's got like glitter running through it.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's the kind of magical kind of thing about it, and it's
so you shit glitter.
that's a major
thing. It's good though. It's good gin. It's like we've had quite a lot of unicorn.
Have you had any? I mean, I don't expect you to tell us. Have you been sponsored by anyone who sent you a drink that you have all been? This is awful. This is horrible.
No, not yet. I don't think. But we'll also pretty much drink anything.
Right. Especially if you drink something else first.
We had a coffee liqueur, which is sort of it's like Kahlua, but it wasn't. And it's just because you guys didn't like coffee-flavored stuff, so...
You got to have it all.
We record at my house, so I'm the one in the most danger. One day, a delivery came of a case of beer, and my doorbell rang, and I have an answer phone, so I was like, hello? And I just heard, drunk women? I was like, yeah, that's us. Just leave it outside.
But so the drinks, is it a drinks company that sends you stuff? Or is it different drinks people?
Lots of different drinks
companies.
Yeah,
we've had a mix.
Yeah, we've had lots of different things. Like some, like I just happened to meet somebody who does this, they're called Belfield Brewery, and they do like gluten-free beer up in Edinburgh, and I went to the Edinburgh TV Festival and they were giving out beers there, and I was like, oh, do you want to give me some beers for my podcast? And he was like, yeah, that's fine. And that's really good beer as well. It's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm not even gluten-free, but what a treat.
We can exchange this for goods now. I didn't realize, so we can go to the shop and say, can I have a Freddo? By the way, I'm going to be on the podcast.
Well, do you know what? I mean, we've been quite surprised.
Can we exchange anything? Can we get anything around?
Well, not that shop.
Not that shop.
Not that shop, because that shop...
They didn't even do cherry cokes.
When we first started here, they had a fridge full of cherry Pepsi Maxes.
Cherry Pepsi Maxes.
And week by week, they just got less and less. And then we just realised, they just don't buy any stock in. Over 7 months, I'd bought them all out. And then it's just like, oh, you can't go in there anymore. They don't have any stuff. They've got no toilet paper in there. They've got no tin foil. They've got nothing. They've got no washing up. It's just people need stuff and they go in, they buy it, and he doesn't reorder any of it.
I love that.
Got to go down the road. Tesco, isn't it? We're up the road. Co-op.
You live just around the corner, didn't you?
I live just around the corner.
So it's a true crime book. Are you a fan of all these kind of true crime documentaries? Is that how you came to it and things?
Yeah, I can remember watching, like, the Central Park 5 is one of the first that I ever watched. It's a famous case in New York that Trump was involved with, actually. Mm. He famously took out a full-page ad calling for all these guys to be round up and captured, and they were all falsely accused and coerced into...
Oh, wow. Where's that? Is that on Netflix or something?
Oh, it might be on Amazon. I can't remember. Check Netflix. It might be on there. But yeah, I've always had sort of a fascination.
And now it's quite socially acceptable. I would have thought like 10 years
ago. This is what's interesting.
It felt like anyone that was sort of interested. And it actually would have felt like the kind of thing I'd feel a bit grubby about watching. Yeah. Like I'm taking some pleasure in sort of other people's misfortune.
Yeah. I still feel like that. What's the staircase? Oh, yes. I found that was really kind of like...
Not a fan of that
one. Of the series in general.
I just found it really... I found that man really hard to watch, and it was felt very, very biased, and they dragged it out.
I don't know
so
how biased
long.
I found it. I felt like I thought he was guilty for most of it, and then I talked to someone else, and they were like... Because they were watching it, and they were like, I think he's innocent, yeah. Oh, it didn't even occur to me that he was innocent.
But by the end, apparently he was dating the editor of the show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you just think, it's got to be kind of biased.
I found that
uncomfortable. I mean, to be honest, if you're the editor, you're very brave. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't you think... Right? I mean, if anything, you've got to... She's the hero of the story when you look at it.
Yeah.
You've got to go, wow, what an incredible woman.
But I was
annoyed.
It could have been four episodes. That's what annoyed me.
It was really dragged out.
Yeah. Hard work.
But then that was like when making the merger. When I was watching Making a Murderer, you watched the first episode of Making a Murderer, and I was like... Well, what are they going to talk about in the next episode? And then
right.
To the end of the episode, you go, oh, my God! I thought it was going to be like one
crime
a week. And then you go like, oh, my God! It's completely... And the one that was really horrible was, I think, Evil Genius.
Oh,
it felt
yes.
like you were really reveling in like a whole group of people.
That was
misery.
The right length, though. It was only about five episodes, I think, Evil Genius? Or five
it was
or six?
The right length, but yeah. just...
But I know what
really,
you mean.
It was just like you were reveling in it. And then the other one I watched was, what's the one you let me? The Jinx.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The Jinx. Oh.
Jinx!
Jinx is, don't find anything out about that.
Okay.
And just watch it.
Yeah. Because and there's only four,
somebody,
right?
Somebody recommended it to me using the final twist as his entry point. And I was just like, so then I was watching it going, well, I know the end.
Oh,
I know the end.
The final twist is literally the last 10 seconds of the documentary as well.
Oh, why do people do
that? It was really good though. Yeah, why do people do that?
I know.
It's a horrible treat.
So what it is at the end of the Jinx.
It's like when people say, tell your joke about how sugar puffs are called sugar puffs and not honey monster. But you can't do that joke anymore, can you, Nat? Because now they're called honey monsters. Now do that joke. You'll love this.
I'm not doing it.
I saw it on your show as well.
Oh, yes,
bored of it,
you.
Mate. No, it's really good. Oh. It's a good joke.
Me too. I'm bored.
But so you were talking about the true crime thing. What was about the Central Park Five?
Mm-hmm.
And where
I think that's a very
it.
Well done documentary as well. I mean, they vary so much, don't they? Like, they're not all good. I think there is an interesting question in there about what is tasteful, and there is more of an acceptance of consuming it, but there are true crime podcasts that are just, they go too far for me. Like, I can't do Sword and Scale. They just get into such detail, and they'll play, like, emergency calls and stuff. And, I think there's something, it's exploitative at a point. And I think we tend to do historical crimes and stuff where there's a little bit of distance.
Well,
where
how
we
much
can,
distance is...
I mean,
I think it really just, it totally depends, doesn't it, on what the crime is. So like D.B. Cooper, which is the one we did with London, like nobody, apart from him jumping off the back of the plane and potentially dying, no one actually died in that story. And that's the 70s. That's relatively recent.
Yeah, I knew about that. Well, I'd heard about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, like the whole thing.
And you had Lizzie Borden, that one, which is another thing. Well, that was something like I'd heard of it, but it was almost listening to it was actually giving me the details, whereas I just know it as Lizzie Borden murdered her mum. That's what the thing is. It's like,
right.
Oh, that, and she's sort of this famous figure, right? But I didn't know the story.
And she met her dad as well, so there's loads more to it.
But there is. That's it. When you hear it, you're going, actually, there's a lot more to this than the sort of the general thing you've been told. It's like, oh, well, she killed her mum. But you go, but then it's listen to it. You go, did she? And what's the what actually happened? Or you just get told this
and all
this
the,
truth.
Like,
and then you have to sort of slightly unravel it when you're listening to it.
I didn't know anything about that case.
Like, oh, we got a bit of hate about that.
We got a little bit of hate. They're like, I can't believe these bitches didn't know the Lizzie Borden case. And we're like, this is where I'm so glad that my historical knowledge sucks, because every episode is like a big surprise. I'm like, this happened?
Although we did one, the one we did last night was a story that happened in Edinburgh, and there's a pub named after this woman. And I realised that I knew the story that Katie was presenting because I'd read about it on the menu of the pub when I went up there. So that's kind of more difficult because you have to sort of...
But you know what she didn't do? Yeah. She didn't spoil it.
The pub was called the name...
It was called Maggie... It's called Maggie Dixon's.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and Maggie Dixon...
I thought the pub... Because I know a pub. Right, doesn't matter. I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay. So actually, it's better that we don't know a huge amount about all of these cases. Although we're sort of fans of true crime and stuff, like the historical ones, you can just find some really fucked up
shit. Also, there must be millions over, if you're doing all time.
What I do is, like, Toby is really, so my boyfriend's really into, like, sort of death metal and metal and stuff, and loads of metal bands have the same name as, like, murderers and stuff. So there's Bathory, who, like, Bathory's an amazing case of Lady Bathory, you know. And also, there's a band called Lizzie Borden as well, I think.
Oh, is there really?
Yeah, yeah. So every so often he'll say, oh, I'm really into this band. And I'll be like, are they a murderer? Because I might use that.
I'm a big fan of Anthony Newley, the singer-songwriter and musical performer. And he mentions Lizzie Borden in one of his songs. But just one of his rhymes is, Lizzie Borden massacred her mum. It's one of his
Is it a massacre if you do it to one person?
I don't know. Not sure.
No,
I guess not.
It's not.
But yeah.
So. Well.
Is it? Can you massacre someone? A single person? No, probably not.
No.
I think it's a...
I mean, it suggests that you're doing it really horribly.
It does.
Oh, I massacred you.
It's a strong word.
It is. Yeah. For a single murder. Yeah. Murder's bad, though, isn't it, guys? Can we agree on that?
We do. Sure. We should agree on that.
We always do, yeah.
Nick?
So
bad, is it? Yeah, disagree with it.
Yeah, bad. It's 3 out of 5. I mean, you couldn't use that on a flyer, but
I think in some ways a massacre is an indiscriminate and brutal murder of many people.
Slaughter
of many people.
Cool. Okay.
But you are.
Fucking hell. I mean, come on. You can't go. Massacre is an indiscriminate.
No
and
one
brutal,
knew, Nick. No one knew. No one could tell. I was reading it.
Yeah, but you can't go. Massacre is an indiscriminate and brutal slaughter of many people. So, Hannah, you're a big fan of Jane McDonald.
They do it on This Morning all the time.
They do it on the one show.
They do it all the time on those shows. They talk about something really serious.
Have you ever seen that clip of, who is it? The guy, Blazing Saddles. Who wrote Blazing Saddles?
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks is on the one show, and they go from like one really thing to something really bad, and you just hear him. And he just goes, "What is this show?
What is this show?"
It's so funny. It's just the funniest. Oh man!
But I think is that a thing that's typical to the UK having those shows that go from incredibly dark?
It's a prime time. It's like one of the most popular prime time TV shows, and it's fucking mental. And it's a nobody ever talks about the fact it's fucking mental. Everyone just like goes, "Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing." We're talking to a cancer patient, and now we're going to see a squirrel juggling, and we've got the largest collection of stamps. And the man actually got crushed to death underneath those stamps. So you can just imagine just how many stamps there were. It's fucking insane, and you know, my parents watch it all the time, and you try and point out to them, you know, it's mental.
Yeah,
and I think.
But this show is very much in the tradition of that. It's a tribute to those shows in many ways. It's an homage to This Morning and The One Show.
That's what I'm getting. That's the vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're hoping to be on The One Show. That's what we're hoping for. This is basically like a 30-week audition to be on The One Show, or we also want the Radio 2 breakfast show that Zoe Ball's got. We think this will be good. We could do that, I think.
Yeah.
We've got to see if we can get on those.
The good thing about this is it's midday and it's around the corner from where. I mean, I don't want to do the Zoe Ball one show.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, it's
the Temple One show is not a thing that exists either. That is a combination of two shows.
Yeah.
You guys, I was a little bit more comfortable with Massacre. Can we go back to that segue?
Yeah.
Are you both fans of Jane McDonald TV show, the Jane McDonald TV show Cruising?
I've never seen it, but I thought as much. Oh my gosh, I hear about it every time.
I just assumed it was Hannah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you like about Jane McDonald's Cruising?
It's called Cruising with Jane McDonald. And
is it like the Al Pacino movie?
It's very similar.
It's a great movie, ain't you, Cruising?
It's a great fucking movie!
It's a great movie. It's a terrific movie. I'd recommend it.
Does Al Pacino at the end, does he do a song at the end? Because if he doesn't, it's very similar. It's just great. I just love it.
Cruising is different from The Cruise. With Jane McDonald?
Yes, that was obviously
the first one, 15 years ago.
She's my dream guest for Drunk Women because she likes a drink, and she's on these cruises, and she starts every episode with she looks in the camera and she goes, "We're going on those holidays. Are you coming?" And then she walks towards the ship, and I love it. Every time that starts, I'm like, "Fucking in. Let's have this."
Ironically.
No, she's just like, "Come on." And then at the end, she does this bit at the end, so she does a song at the end as well, which is just... Oh.
Having a do!
It's brilliant. And then at the end, she'll do some joke at the end. There's always a little sketch at the end where it'll end with her just turning to the camera and just shouting, "What?" And that's how she ends every episode. And there's just something about it that it's Channel 5, and they've obviously just said, "Just make us a show, Jane." And she's gone, "I'm just going to do what I fancy." And that's what I love about it.
It's nice that she's given the artistic freedom to do whatever she likes on Channel 5.
She's earned it.
She's earned it.
She's just gone off. She just goes on cruises.
Would you like to write one of her sketches?
Well, I think they just happen, you know. I don't think there's any writing.
There's nothing pre-planned or cynical about Jane McDonald.
That's what's clever about it, is that it's improvised.
It's just improvised, and then she goes around with a GoPro at some point. She's like, "Right,
fucking hell!"
That is brilliant, though, because she goes around with
a giant hamster ball going down a hill. Jane McDonald with a GoPro.
But she just she doesn't have the people with her, so she doesn't have a camera crew. And I'm sure she edits it as well, because every single scene that she does with that is always someone recognising her. So there's about three different things, and people go, "It's Jane McDonald." She's like, "It's me." I love her with a. I mean, it's a weird obsession. I'm a really big fan.
I saw it's not James, but I saw someone who was on Coronation Street once, and I saw her and I did that sort of double take, but she was sort of very show busy, and as soon as I did a double take, she really kind of made a point of like waving at me, and I wasn't going to say anything. I just was like, "Oh, she's off Coronation Street, isn't she?" But she had a real like, "Oh," and I was like, "Oh, hello."
Yes.
But I wouldn't have said it. It's like, because you see, it's in London, so you see people go, "Oh, that's that guy." But it's just that, like, it's almost like my eyes shifted towards her, like, "Oh, that's that." But then she sort of went from that as if like, "Oh, it's me," and I was like, "Oh, hello."
I was in Westfield Shopping Centre, and I saw one of my mates, so I waved at them, and then it turned out it was Dean Gaffney, and I just recognised him off the telly.
I said hello to a girl once who I went to school with on the tube, and she said to me, she said, "Oh, hi," and as I went past, I realised that she was off Grange Hill, and she wasn't, I didn't go to school with her at all, but I thought, good on her, that she suddenly took it like, "Oh, hey." And is that where you think, she must get that all the time, I think. Mm-hmm. And it must just be, everyone must think she was at school with them.
Yes.
So, "Oh, hey, how you doing?" She's like, "Oh, not bad, hi." And she just carried on walking. It was only that kind of, it was a really normal interaction. She wasn't like, "You don't know me." Or she just took it in her
She's
stride.
She's a professional.
Absolutely.
Is she still working now, or has she opened a key cutting place?
She's working, but not as an actress.
What's she meant to do? You didn't say "Hi, we went to school together." You just recognised her from the thing. So as far as she's concerned,
she probably might just
you only recognised her from the TV.
That's right.
Right. You didn't have she didn't know, "Bloody hell, he said hello to me because he thinks we went to school together." She didn't have that
it's
much
true.
Of the story.
It's
you
true.
Said hello and she said hello back.
So maybe it's politeness.
She was just being polite.
maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I liked her anyway for it. I thought I respect her. Even if it's just for being polite, being a nice human being.
Christ.
Goes a long way.
Anyway, Jane McDonald TV show, Chris, where can you watch that?
Channel 5, mate.
Every day?
every day. If
it's not every
like
day,
me.
Is it? Is it every day?
No, it's once a week.
But I could set it on my Skybox and I could tape
you
it.
Could.
It does actually sound like my sort of...
Do you know what? It's just like...
How long is each episode?
Oh,
half an hour. Is it a commercial half hour? 22 minutes?
I think it might be it's a commercial hour.
Oh, wow. 42
yeah.
minutes.
Strap in.
45 minutes. What's a commercial hour? I think it's 42 minutes, you know.
Something like that,
I'm not going to lie. I think it's 42 good. Minutes.
Thanks, Nick. Yes, I think it is.
If it's a Netflix hour, that's an hour.
Yeah, long hour, isn't it?
One of the ones on here, one of the things you're also a fan of, tasty videos on YouTube, isn't that? I don't know what that means.
What's a tasty video?
Oh, guys, wow. You're gonna have a very good night now watching okay. these. It's just it's a channel, and they make different recipes.
A channel, Tasty?
It's a YouTube channel.
Called Tasty. Okay.
Called Tasty, and they make different recipes, but it's all sped up, so you don't have to sit there. You don't see anybody's face. You just see their hands doing
it. I know the ones, yeah.
I can watch so many of those in a row. I think it's like getting a massage.
What is it, just hands?
Yeah, it's just their hands doing it, and it's edited really quick. So it'll be like a minute long, and you'll learn how to make, you know, like deep dish apple pie with, you know, refrigerated dough, and you just add some apples. And
it's a time-lapse video where they basically, you've got a camera set up, and then they do it. And then you get it on your sort of like Facebook timeline where here's a new recipe, and they do this thing. But I love those videos.
It's just weird. They put my head into this very happy place. I've never made anything, and I love to cook. No, I love to cook.
I did one the other day whereby I saw that if you, like, freeze an egg, then you can take off the shell of the egg and then you can cut it and then fry little tiny fried eggs.
Oh, that makes sense. I've done that by accident before. Where I've put the setting of my fridge too high and it's come up. And you get this and it's a weird looking thing.
Yeah,
it is like a sort of, you know, I know you can't handle eggs, can you?
I hate eggs.
Reference to eggs. But it is like a clear sort of...
I fucked up again.
I don't know. I guess it is just an egg-shaped bit of
slime.
10 years
later, you're still fucking up. Get out. I'll fill the next 15 minutes myself.
Oh, 15? Fucking hell.
No, go on. Keep talking about your eggs.
No, I was just saying I've accidentally frozen an egg where it comes out as a sort of...
It's weird, isn't it?
It's an odd-looking thing.
It's not very appetizing.
But I wouldn't have thought to chop it up. I'm not sure I'd want to. It felt like I should definitely bin this.
Yeah,
it looks like a horrible thing.
I don't know why, but as you're telling this story, doesn't he remind you of Steve Buscemi? Like, playing a character talking about, like, a frozen egg once. Is that just me?
I mean... Well, that's... Do you know what? I've had it before.
Have you?
I've had it before.
It's a good thing. Loves little Buscemi.
I like him.
With his frozen eggs.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It could be in a script, couldn't it? Could be in someone's screenplay.
Yeah.
One of Jane McDonald's, maybe.
Jane McDonald's screenplay?
Yeah.
She's on a cruise writing a screenplay.
Jane McDonald and Steve Buscemi.
She sings. Maybe if Jane McDonald... Maybe if on one of her cruises there was a murder...
Oh.
And Jane McDonald had to go around the cruise singing and solving.
That's what it can be called.
Yeah. Isn't one of the Poirots on a cruise?
Oh, I imagine it is, actually.
Death
on the Nile?
Death on the Nile?
Yeah.
Also, like, Speed
Death in Venice
3?
Is not Poirot.
Jane McDonald.
Speed 2.
Speed 2.
Speed 2. Snooze control. It's, oh my God, there's a boat that's travelling at 20 miles an hour. yeah, that's Speed 2. But that's not about a murder mystery and it's not about Jane McDonald.
Well, perhaps Jane McDonald could play Hercule Poirot. They could do a gender switch. Ooh. And have as the new David Suchet's finished, isn't he? He's finished as Poirot.
Yeah.
So you've got a new Poirot. So, Jane McDonald.
David Sachet, as I call him. got any salt, David? got any miniature salt and pepper, yeah. David Sachet.
I don't know if this is worse than what Jane McDonald would have written. No, is that one of the sketches she would do?
But what you should do is should just basically take all of those things, you know, take all them films and put Jane McDonald in them. Jane McDonald on a bus.
Yeah. Yeah, and then do like musicals, but take all the music out as an extra kind of like twist. So she, yeah. So
Jane McDonald's West Side Story, but there's no singing.
Yeah. plays every character.
Jane McDonald on her own up a building, trying to fight terrorists.
Jane Hard, that would be good.
Jane McDonald.
Come on, show some respect.
More like Nick Hard.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God, I've just come with it. And so, I love the idea of Jane McDonald up a building. Jane McDonald one side of the country, quite bereaved, and on the other side of the country, Jane McDonald is listening to a phone-in where Jane McDonald phones in and talks about her recent bereavement, and then Jane McDonald goes, "I like the sound of this, Jane McDonald," and she goes across country to visit. To start spying and stalking on Jane McDonald and Jane McDonald's kids.
I'm trying to work out what this is.
It's Sleeps in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
But what would you call that?
I thought that was going to be a really good pun at the end of this.
No, yeah, no, I was hoping for something. I was trying to think, where's this going? Where's this going?
I like Jane McDonald.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
I'll watch Cruising. Not that you've come in to promote Cruising.
I feel like I have a little bit, but yes.
I mean, we're on Tasty Videos, sorry.
There's not much to say about them. It's a very visual
really
thing.
Really good.
Check them out.
I bet someone slowed them down. I bet, even though they're quick, I bet somewhere on YouTube there's one where you can watch it for like 7 hours that's just super slow.
No, that sounds awful.
Someone cracking
an egg.
Why do you keep going on about eggs?
Because most people aren't afraid of eggs.
I'm not afraid of them. I find them just so fucking physically disgusting.
Really?
Just everything about them makes me feel physically sick.
Even when they're cooked?
Just, yes, even when they're cooked, especially when they're cooked, when people eat them, when people go on and on and on about them, when people start talking about them. Oh, I love an egg, do you? Fuck off.
Easter must be a really hard time.
Easter is really hard because I'm not eating chocolate either.
Oh,
fucking
mate,
chocolate in the shape of an egg.
Did you listen to our last episode with Jenny Eclair? Because we we talk about a witch who... it has a very graphic egg portion that I'm a bit... We should put a trigger warning on it just
it
for Nick.
It's only because you've gone on and on about it in this one, but eggs are associated with evil, isn't it? Like the witch in Robin Hood.
Well, if you're a fan of eggs, if someone came on, I'm a fan of eggs and I want to talk about eggs.
Well, they run past Two Wee Book and Do We Ever Say So, and I would just say absolutely not. We're not having them in.
We should do a game because we've got to finish early.
I've got to press a button.
Okay, what this game is, this game is Better or Worse, where you two have to decide whether...
Hang on. Right, okay, go for it. We're going to play a game.
This game, Better or Worse, and you have to decide whether the person afterwards is better or worse than the person before it. Starting with Salma Hayek. Salma Hayek,
okay.
She's your first one.
That's a pretty high card there,
Matt. Is Ted Danson better or worse than Salma Hayek?
What was the second one?
Ted Danson.
Oh.
It's better.
Better?
Oh, gosh, better, yeah.
He is better.
Yeah.
Julie Andrews, better or worse than Ted Danson?
Worse.
Julie Andrews?
Yeah, I really like Ted Danson.
Yeah,
I really like
that.
It's a high card.
Yeah, it's a high card.
I think that's absolutely insane. Julie Andrews is much
better. Andrews?
I've never seen Sound of Music, so...
Oh, well, fucking hell.
Wow.
It's not our fault, then, that you're fucking your life up. Jesus Christ.
But you'd see it if Jane McDonald was in it.
And Ted Danson. That's actually
Julie
not
Andrews
a bad remake.
Is better
that
than Ted Danson. Is Harvey Keitel better or worse than Julie Andrews?
Worse.
Oh, worse.
Worse, yeah. Is Cary Grant better or worse than Harvey Keitel?
Better.
Yeah.
Is Tina Turner better or worse than Cary Grant?
Better.
Oh, you can't have equal, can you?
It's tough.
I mean, they're both fucking high cards, but fucking hell, Tina Turner.
She's
good.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go Cary Grant.
I don't blame you. I think it's just that. It's like, oh, it's so level.
And is James Stewart better or worse than Tina Turner?
Worse.
Can I say better? Let's say better.
Oh.
I love James.
Yeah, but you're very much speaking about an era there, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
I'd say James Stewart and Cary Grant are interchangeable to a certain point.
Is Mark Wahlberg better or worse than James Stewart?
Worse.
You could say anyone.
Is Viola Davis better or worse than Mark Wahlberg?
Better.
Better. And is Penelope Cruz better or worse than Viola Davis?
Worse.
Worse.
Worse, yeah, worse. Yeah. I like her. I like her.
Viola
against
Davis
her.
Is awesome.
Yeah. Penelope Cruz and Tom Cruise and Jane McDonald.
Yes.
And she could call it schmoozing and cruising.
That was a 6-pointer.
6 points.
Ooh. Which means you are equal with Colin Holt.
Very nice.
Andy Kindler.
Excellent.
Marek Larwood.
Another Isle of Wight boy. Very nice.
Susie Porter.
Lucy Porter.
Lucy Porter. Susie Porter. Who's that? Richard Sandling. Mark nice. Simmons. And David Trent.
Wow.
Equal. Equally as good as them.
Well,
but you
that's
are,
good news.
But you are worse than
quite a lot of people. There's a very small list of there's three people that have been worse than you.
Yeah, so you're better than Yasmin Akram
with 5, Jack Barry with 4, and Sam Ashurst with 3.
Imagine getting three.
I say it almost every week. I cannot believe it. It is all based on. It's entirely based on my own opinion. It's a bit of fun. It's entirely based on Nat's own opinion. So
it's very fun.
We can't take it that seriously. But
I can watch tasty videos and play that all day. Like, that's my ideal day.
You can do both
day.
At the same time.
Sure.
Well, you can have it fed into your ear.
Yeah.
We've misjudged this slightly because we played the game too early, Nat.
We had to finish early. We're finishing
but now what are we going to do for the next fucking...
Just sit in
we
silence.
We can't start up a
sit
new conversation.
Silence.
What is your favourite film, Hannah?
Oh, my favourite film? Wicker Man, probably. That's probably...
Oh, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Absolutely brilliant. Fucking. Why didn't we do this? We've been on Jane McDonald for half an hour.
Oh, fucking hell. I have to say
we never talk about Jane McDonald, though. True. We have mentioned the fucking Wicker Man. We mentioned it last week.
She could remake The Wicker Man.
I'd watch it.
I'd definitely watch that.
I'd watch it.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
The song's in The Wicker Man as well. She could sing one of the songs.
Gently Johnny.
She could do all that. God, I love it.
What's your favourite film, Taylor?
Oh, that's tough. I'd probably say City of God.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's
great
a great
film.
Movie.
The Brazilian film?
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen it.
Oh, it's very good.
Oh, I don't think I've seen it.
It's that heavy, but it's amazing. It's an amazing
They made it into
film.
A TV series as well, didn't
they? They did.
What?
There's a TV series based on it.
Oh, I don't know if I approve
it. It was like
that.
A spin-off.
Mm. Right, I think it's made by the same people.
It's like this is England.
It's like
this is
more
England.
Tales. More tales of.
Okay. What is it on?
I don't know.
It was out ages ago. It was out before Netflix.
Wow, that has that totally passed me by.
And your live podcast is on the 6th of December.
Yes, indeed.
And if people wanted to get tickets for it, where would they get tickets at?
On the Pleasants website.
Yeah, I think that's
Google. thepleasants.co.uk.
How many live shows do you do?
Well, this will only be our second. But we're thinking of booking some more in. We're probably going to do Edinburgh as well.
Do you prefer the live ones?
Well, they've been really, really good fun, but they're a little bit more high stressed, you know, compared to doing ones just in Taylor's living room.
Yeah, really different feel. But they're very fun.
They are fun. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do all of them live because I think then suddenly we'd have to do every single one live. And they do have a different feel, but they are fun. It's good fun.
Yeah. And also it's a lot of organisation, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah.
I just don't like to leave my house that much. It's too many times.
Just round the corner from mine. So, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for joining us.
It's lovely talking to you both.
You too.
It's all forgiven, Hannah.
Oh, thank you.
It's all good.
I'm truly sorry on behalf of Richard, whose problem it was. I mean, he did that. So.
Sure. I mean, blame the guy that's not here.
get greedy. You start to lose your nuts. Don't you look seedy? Can generosity bring you humility? So take a deep breath.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.